Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 25th, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. A really interesting day today. We got Shane Bieber pitching for the Indians against the Minnesota Twins and Rich Hill. Albert Pujols passed Alex Rodriguez in a milestone. We'll be getting to all that. We're going to be talking with David Schoenfield of ESPN and Mandy Bell of MLB.com. The Mets will resume play today. At least that's what's scheduled. They had their last four games postponed after announcing last Thursday the two members of the traveling party tested positive for COVID-19. MLB said Monday that all subsequent tests, including those conducted Sunday, came back negative and that the Mets will resume play today with a doubleheader against the Marlins. The Angels and Astros series has been shifted ahead of Tropical Storm Laura. The Astros and Angels will play a doubleheader today. Albert Pujols, as I mentioned, passed Alex Rodriguez on the all-time RBI list. He now has 2,087. Here's what that sounded like.
Shot into left field, and he's going to get a hit on that one. And the ball juggled a little bit by the left fielder, Kyle Tucker. Trout has scored. Going first to third on that one will be Rendon. Albert has an RBI single. The Angels are right back in this game, trailing 5-4, and have the tying run at third base with two outs.
That from the Angels radio network, Terry Smith at the microphone. Jose Quintana is set to rejoin the Cubs. He's going to start out in the bullpen because, of course, he has to build up his pitch count. He has missed the first half of the season after injuring his pitching hand in a cooking accident. Indians manager Terry Francona will miss the three-game series against the Twins this week that started last night. Francona, 61, has already missed 17 games, and the club will be without him as it takes on the Twins, who went into the series leading Cleveland by a game and a half. The Twins facing the Indians last night, and Miguel Sano got a big hit.
And here's the pitch. Hit in the air, right center field, and well, this ball is going to be out of here. An opposite field two-run homer for Miguel Sano, and the Twins now lead 3-1.
The unmistakable voice of Dan Gladden on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Twins win that first game of the series against the Indians, 3-2. Brewers beat the Reds 4-2. Justin Smoak had a hand in that.
Bauer throws, swinging a high fly towards right. Drifting back, Castellanos. It's gone! Justin Smoak with a two-run home run. It's 3-0 Brewers.
The Cubs took out the Tigers 9-3. Javier Baez had himself a day.
Baez drives one in the air toward right center field. Deep. This ball's back toward the wall and gone. Home run for Javier Baez to right center. And the Cubs have broken it up and broken it open a little bit, leading 6-1 opposite field.
Pat Hughes on the Cubs radio network. Now, before we get to David Schoenfield and to Mandy Bell, check out the latest episode of The Hoop Collective. Shanae and Mike Jr., hosts of ESPN Radio's Shanae and Golic Jr., join Brian Windhorst to laud Luka Doncic's Game 4 performance and to question Paul George's readiness for the big stage. Then Tim Bontemps blasts the 76ers for a disappointing season before diving into Joel Embiid's cryptic postgame comments and the team's murky future. Man, is that team a mess. The NBA playoffs are just heating up. Listen to The Hoop Collective wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show, mate!
Welcome to the show! Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
Yeah, David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN. Dave, welcome.
Good morning, Buster.
So every day I look at the baseball schedule and try to pick out a game that I really want to watch. Like yesterday, I watched pretty much all of the Rays and the Blue Jays, and that was a fun game. You know, watching the Blue Jays go through the season when it looks like they're going to return to the playoffs. It's an interesting team to watch today. No doubt about it. The game I've got circled, the Minnesota Twins against the Cleveland Indians. You've got Shane Bieber on the mound for the Indians. So far, he's been the best pitcher in baseball. I think I read yesterday, Jeff Passan nominated him for MVP of the American League so far, and he's going up against Rich Hill. And it feels like one of those pivotal games because the Twins have a lead on the Indians in the standings, and it's not a big lead. You know, over the course of 162 games, we wouldn't even notice it. But it feels like this is a game where the Twins could separate themselves a little bit if they're able to find Bieber. Do you agree with me today? That's the game, or you got another one?
Yeah, no, I like that. Look, Bieber has become, you know, must-watch, you know, television. You know, he's that good. I was trying to think about who I compare him to, you know, and I don't know, nobody popped into mind. Maybe a little bit Brett Saberhagen, because he just throws strikes after strike after strike. He's got the full arsenal of pitches. He changes his speed. His fastball, it's good, 94, but that's only MLB average these days. But yeah, I'm with you. Big game, especially since the Twins you know, beat Cleveland last night. So, you know, much bigger for Cleveland, you know, Bieber 5-0 and 6 starts. Yeah. Must watch TV, Shane Bieber.
Yeah. And I looked up this number. I wrote it on Sunday. I can't remember if I talked about it yesterday with Tim, but, Bieber, of course, he struck out 43% of the hitters that he's faced, 65 of 150. There have only been 15 at bats against him in which the opponents have a runner in scoring position. In those at-bats, opponents are 0 for 15 with 9 strikeouts. You know, and I want to make clear, I'm not comparing Shane Bieber's career to the guy I'm going to mention, but the guy he kind of reminds me of is Pedro, you know, back in the day, because the pure stuff, even for an idiot like me who didn't play, you know, never played anything beyond JV baseball, can watch that stuff and go, wow. Like that cut fastball and the ugly swings that he gets, that's why he kind of reminds me of Pedro. You know, because Pedro would pitch in those games and hitters would be trying to figure out, okay, do I focus on the fastball? Do I anticipate the curveball? How do I react? And he got the ugliest swings. And that's what you're seeing in Bieber this year, just an unbelievable amount of ugly swings.
Yeah, I remember the old ESPN baseball analyst Dave Campbell telling me once about the thing that made Pedro so unhittable is he had 3 top-shelf unhittable pitches, where even Tom Seaver, Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax, those guys only had 2. Pedro had 3. That's kind of Bieber because he's, you know, he's also has that big curveball that seems unhittable. You know, cutter, slider, he, you know, spots the fastball where he needs to and even mixes in a changeup every now and then. And yeah, the only way to score off him this year is to hit a home run, which the Twins do hit a lot of home runs.
Yeah, it'll be a fun game to watch for sure. All right. You got a piece on ESPN.com this morning about, you know, what we've learned so far this season. Give me a couple items that really stuck out to you.
Well, I mean, aside from Fernando Tatis, and we've talked a lot about him, I think the most disappointing thing about this season is we're not going to know how great the Dodgers could have been. You know, they're on a historic run as far as their run differential, but they're only going to get 60 games instead of 162. Buster, I don't know what you think. I think this team is so good, they could have challenged that 116 wins by the 2001 Mariners. You know, they're just so deep. But they're, you know, look, they're going to be a great team, but we're not going to see if they could have been one of the all-time great regular season teams. So, you know, Mookie Betts, of course, is right up there with Tatis is in the MVP race. So that stands out to me. But, you know, the standings, we look at them and we kind of expected a bizarre year. But really, you know, other than the Red Sox being really bad and the Angels being really bad, they're kind of what we expected. So we haven't seen a whole lot of surprise in the standings. So I think those are the two things that stand out to me.
Yeah, I agree with you about the Dodgers. It's incredible looking at their run differential. You know, just as that absolutely piles up, you're like, oh, my God, where, you know, over 162 games, they would be one of the greatest teams of all time in terms of their trajectory, their run differential. And that'll change and it might not necessarily last, but the right. absolute depth there. It does sort of underscore the serendipitous nature of it and the weirdness of this season. Is one executive said to me yesterday, you know, the Dodgers are unbelievable. They're right now the best team in baseball, but that first round's a best of three series.
Yeah.
And you get bad luck in one game. You don't play well in one game. And then you run into a pitcher the next day and they could be sitting at home. And you remember, that moment last year when Howie Kendrick, hit the home run to beat the Dodgers and sort of the physical reactions of the Dodger players. Like yeah. It never occurred to them that they might lose. And I think there could be a similar dynamic in play if they get to the postseason and were to be, you know, ambushed in a 3-game series.
Well, I feel mean even bringing this up, but yeah, say Walker Buehler faces, I don't know, like you said, anybody could win one game. Say he loses the first game. Then you got Clayton Kershaw in game two of that 3-game series. Imagine the pressure on him with his postseason history. That game would be almost unbearable, I think, for Dodgers fans to watch. But, yeah, that's why that 3-game series is going to lead. The unpredictability of this season is going to come in that first round of the playoffs because that's when some weird things might happen.
So we are now only 6 days away from the trade market. And what I heard generally yesterday was that the volume of calls from team to team jumped significantly, where teams are now beginning to sort of show their cards about, okay, if this, and this happens this week, then this is the direction we're going to go. I heard from a couple people, the only real declared seller, remarkably, is the Seattle Mariners. Like they're out there like, anybody, you want to talk, give us a call. Whereas, you know, even some teams that I think at this point, other clubs felt like that, you know, it would make sense for them to sell. They haven't declared themselves because 16 teams are going to make the playoffs. And I asked an executive, and this was an official with a big market team. I said, you know, we were talking about Mike Clevinger, and I mentioned, you know, he's not making that much money this year, you know, $4 million prorated. And he said, this year, every dollar counts. This year, every dollar is meaningful because of the financial losses this year. What's your sense about where we are now in the trade market?
Yeah, and I know you wrote a little bit about that the other day. I think that's huge. And I know we get all hyped up, even for this trade deadline. But that's such an important factor, Buster. And you nailed it. You know, teams are going to lose a lot of money this year. You know, so bringing on a big salaried player, you know, I think of maybe a Trevor Bauer. I don't think the Reds are going to punt, but they're 11-16. Bauer, he scuffled a little bit last night, but he's been terrific this year. You know, he'd be right up there with Clevinger as a guy you'd want, but he makes a lot more money, which makes him, you know, less tradable than a Mike Clevinger. And Clevinger also has a couple more years of team control. But yeah, it's a huge factor. You know, speaking of teams that are selling, I saw an interview with Dayton Moore yesterday, and he said the Royals are still right as of now going for that number 8 playoff spot. So, yeah, the Mariners and the Pirates are terrible. Who knows if anybody else is even going to be selling?
Yeah, and that surprised people with other teams because, as you know, the Royals actually have some tradable pieces.
Yep.
You know, in theory, in Trevor Rosenthal and Greg Holland, but one of the factors, and wrote about this the other day, is the question of what is this all really worth? when you talk about trading, because it's clear, you know, with their team's handling of this, that some teams aren't treating this as like a big deal, the 60-game season. Yeah, they if they have an opportunity, they'd go for the win. But I think a lot of teams are going to look at it as kind of a bootleg season. And, you know, let's say that on Sunday, you know, there was conversation about Trevor Bauer. The most starts that he would have in the regular season for any team is 5 starts. So if you're an interested team, what are you going to give up for that? It's not going to be significant. And then if you're the Reds and you get offered, you know, a B-minus prospect or a grade B prospect, is that something you're going to do? Or are you just going to say, you know what, we're going to keep the team together. You know, we'll move forward and shoot. You know, it might be that they decide that they just would rather hang on to him. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I mentioned Clevenger. I talked about him on the podcast yesterday with Sarah Langs and with Tim Kirkchin. I think that's an outlier guy in that I think there's so much potential value in a trade for the Indians, because not only would the acquiring team get him for this year, but for the next 2 years. And I think it makes sense for the Indians with their starting pitching. And one of the interesting teams to me is going to be the Yankees. And there's clearly an obvious potential fit with the Yankees in outfielder Clint Frazier. But as you know, Clint Frazier was drafted, developed in the Indians organization. He was traded to the Yankees in the Andrew Miller deal. And would they want him back? You know, they know him probably better than anybody. Is that a player that they would want to jump on? Miguel Andujar, potentially another candidate as well. And you know, would the Indians just ask for a lot more than that?
Yeah, it seems to be a potential match, especially with James Paxton, you know, on the IL. We don't know when he's going to come back. I mean, who's the number 3 starter for the Yankees right now behind Cole and Tanaka? So they do need that number 3 guy for the playoffs. Yeah, Clint Frazier, he can hit. Not a good defensive outfielder. Not sure that's the guy Cleveland would want. Andujar, same thing. He can hit, doesn't really have a defensive position, but Cleveland needs hitters desperately. So there could be a match there. You know, I think you mentioned the Dodgers yesterday. You know, the Braves need a starting pitcher. There's a match out there for Mike Clevenger for sure if Cleveland wants to trade him.
What would you do if you were Billy Epler and you were running the Angels with Dylan Bundy, who's got 4+ years of service time at the end of this season? They'll have 5+ years of service time, potential free agent in the fall of 2021. This year has been an utter disaster for the Angels. I don't understand how they can be this bad having Trout and Rendon in that lineup. But here we are. So what you could conceivably do is take Dylan Bundy into the trade market, flip him for value. But here's the thing, is that if you do that, then the Angels offseason will be about trying to find somebody to replace him along with all the other pitching needs they have.
Yeah, no, they can't trade starting pitching. They don't have much of it to begin with. Like you said, you're not going to get much for him once you factor in his salary. He's pitching well, but you know, he's not a Trevor Bauer. He's not a Mike Clevenger. I don't see what you're going to gain. You know, look, yeah, you're going nowhere in 2020, but you got to be looking to 2021, and you're going to want Dylan Bundy in your rotation.
What about Matt Harvey? He's an interesting guy to me. He's scheduled to pitch for the Royals tonight. He would be, for me, like the classic 2020 pitcher. Sort of, you know, comes off the scrap heap, signs with the Royals, gets an opportunity, pitches okay. If he pitches well again tonight, I do think there are going to be some teams who say, well, he's not going to be expensive. You know, the Royals aren't going to ask for a boatload in return. And maybe you get a guy who's hot, who in a year in which, let's face it, there are a lot of players, including those who opted out, who don't have a lot of invested in this year. Matt Harvey has everything invested. Like right now, he's fighting for his baseball life.
I wouldn't touch him. I mean, I know you can always roll the dice and hope you get, you know, 5 good starts out of him. But he was so bad last year. He was, you know, not really good in 2018, had some good moments with the Reds, you know, bad in 2017. you know, really his last good year, last time he was really effective was the World Series in 2015. That, to me, that's just too long of a track record of not pitching well, no matter how good he might look in one outing. So I'd stay away, but it wouldn't shock me if some team rolls the dice.
A couple of executives pointed out to me this really weird split going on in the American League standings, where as we sit here today, with the Rays and the Yankees playing well, you know, Toronto doing okay, the Orioles doing okay, and then a bunch of teams absolutely off the cliff in terms of performance. As we sit here today, it looks pretty clear that either the Orioles or the Blue Jays are going to make the playoffs. And the Orioles are 14-14. You know, they got off to a better start. They started to lose some games, but then they won the last two, which I think only complicates the question for the Orioles on whether or not you buy or sell. To me, you absolutely sell. This is clearly a rebuilding team. If you can get value for some of the veterans, you do that. What would you do?
Yeah, I'd sell. Look, I don't. First of all, I don't think they're going to sneak in and win that eighth spot. I think the decision will be made for them. Although I guess in a week they could still be hanging in there. It's not a very good team. Give them credit, you know, for the 500 start. But Toronto's going to win that eighth spot. So yeah, I sell. You know, just go down that roster. You're not a playoff team. Could you win a best of three? Sure, anything can happen. Do you have the depth to do anything else? No. So if you're the Orioles, you sell, you keep this rebuilding process going.
Is there any team, as you look at the market, I've got a team in mind that you say they absolutely have to do something to address this spot, much in the way that I think that 5 days ago, we might've said that about the Phillies and their bullpen. Like, they got to do something.
Right.
For me, it would be the Atlanta Braves with the rotation. They got.
I was just going to say, yeah, you know, that rotation. I mean, this is unbelievable. They're in first place, and Max Fried is the only starter who's won a game. He's 4-0. No other starter has won a game. How are you in first place? So, yeah, credit their bullpen. But, they could, you know, you mentioned Dylan Budding. That's certainly a team that could use even a number three kind of starter like him. You know, certainly a Clevinger or a Bauer. Yeah, the Braves for sure. I would throw Cleveland needing a hitter and maybe the A's just going after somebody. I think the Indians and the A's, you know, have, knowing their postseason history, knowing they have really good teams this year, this is the year where they could sneak in. The Yankees look a little vulnerable. So I'd like to see Cleveland and Oakland make a little addition as well.
Last night, Albert Pujols passes Alex Rodriguez on the career RBI list. And it was interesting because last week, as we're going through this, I looked on Baseball Reference. And according to Baseball Reference, you've got Hank Aaron in the number one spot. You've got Babe Ruth in the number two spot. And then you have now Albert, Alex Rodriguez at 3 and 4. But Albert Pujols, excuse me, Babe Ruth's RBIs are not officially recognized by Elias. I don't know. I kind of look, I mean, Babe Ruth was so good for such a long period of time. I know it's not going to be an official stat, but I kind of look at Babe Ruth as being the next guy that Albert Pujols is in pursuit of. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I get it. RBIs didn't become an official stat until 1920. So Elias only considers RBI since 1920. But historians have, you know, combed through the old box scores and tallied up Ruth. So we kind of know he's really number two on that all-time list. So I'm with you. Pujols, he's got to catch Babe Ruth first, and then Hank Aaron's still quite a ways ahead of him.
Plus he's Babe Ruth, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember that guy was pretty good there for a few years back in the 20s and 30s.
Right, exactly. We're not looking at some of his accomplishments and going, yeah, I don't know, it's overstated. No, he was unbelievable in his day. All right. Dave, I appreciate it. Have fun over the next week. It's going to be crazy.
All right. You bet, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Mandy Bell covers the Cleveland Indians for MLB.com. And Mandy, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. First and foremost, and I get asked about this all the time because I got a chance to work with Terry Francona on Sunday Night Baseball. Everybody in baseball wonders how he's doing. What have you heard?
I mean, I think the latest update is that he's going to be missing this Twin Series this week. And I think they're going to try to give another update for him to possibly be joining the team for the road trip this upcoming weekend. But I think it's tough to think if he's going to be missing this homestand. I don't know if he'll be able to feel well enough to leave home and go on the road. So everything's still up in the air at this point, and we're wishing nothing but the best for Tito.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We talked in the podcast yesterday. We talked today. I'm sure we'll talk as the week goes along about what the Indians might do with the trade deadline. You know, teams are so much struggling to define value and trying to figure out, okay, what's the appropriate asking price given the change in the financial landscape? And I feel like that Mike Clevenger is an outlier, because not only would an acquiring team have him for the rest of this year, but then for the next 2 years, that makes him more attractive. You know, the Indians, from their perspective, they have depth in starting pitching. Clevenger turns 30 later this year, which has to start to be a factor. Based on what you're hearing, is this a lot of, you know, sports writer talk from folks like myself, or do you think that this is something they'll seriously weigh before the deadline?
Well, I think the biggest thing with the Indians is that they seriously weigh everything. Being a small market team, they always have to get crafty and scrappy and figure out exactly the best ways to make their teams better, because they don't have a lot of financial flexibility in that sense. So when you look at this offense, they know that they need to boost it up however they possibly can. So I'm sure that every single trade offer is on the table, and it's something that they're going to weigh very heavily. But the thing that they've also proved over the last 2 years is that they won't move a guy if it's a penny short of what they believe that they deserve. And so if any team's going to inquire about Mike Clevenger, I think it's just going to have to really blow them away of the return that they would get. I mean, we saw it last year with Trevor Bauer and exactly what they got for him. Franmil Reyes, Yasiel Puig, and a couple minor league pitchers to add in there. It was a big haul. So I think if we're talking about Mike Clevenger, they may want the same thing, if not maybe a little bit more. So if they could get all of that in return, then yeah, I'm sure it's something that's on the table. But I think it's going to have to be that perfect package.
Give me two or three teams you think potentially might be on paper a match, you know, without knowing for sure exactly what their conversations have been to date.
You know, I think the biggest one right now is the Yankees. Their need for starting pitching and, you know, the Indians' need for an impact bat, especially an outfielder. And I think Clint Frazier, the Indians know him pretty well. I think Clint Frazier is somebody that really could pique their interest. I think he's somebody that could seamlessly just shift right into this batting order and really make a difference and be an everyday outfielder for them. I think that's something that they're missing. Obviously, they'd have to have a little bit more. I think Chad Green would be somebody that's interesting to throw in into a potential deal with them to help boost up that bullpen. And their bullpen's been pretty solid, but I think he would be a fantastic seventh inning guy before you get to James Karinchak. I think that there's a couple guys within the Indians or within the Yankees that they could use to boost their own roster. So I think if they're looking anywhere, Yankees might be their best bet to try to make the perfect deal.
A motivated buyer, that's for sure. Another position player who the Yankees have they might potentially dangle would be Miguel Andujar. I don't feel like that's as good of a fit. Not that they don't need the offense, but they've got Franmil Reyes as a DH. They've got Carlos Santana to play first base. I think there are a lot of questions in the industry about whether or not Andujar can play third base. And so while he's an attractive hitter and would be a match for other teams, it's it's hard to see the Indians building a deal around a player who's not necessarily going to man a position. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a tough spot. Like you said, it's not that they don't want the bat, because we've seen over the past few years what that bat can do, but I just don't know if they can find a spot for him, because Framil Reyes is locked in that DH spot. They have not worked him into the outfield really at all this year. And then the infield is locked up. You have Jose Ramirez at third, Santana at first. They never take days off. And then if you have Clint Frazier in that deal at all, he'd be in the outfield. I know Miguel Andujar's played a little bit more outfield, but I don't even think that they would have a spot out there. So I think that one's a tough fit for them.
Just to put this to bed, there's no sense that Lindor is on the table leading up the deadline.
I don't think so, no. I think it's going to happen eventually, but I don't see it happening by next week.
And tonight, in what I think is the must-watch game of the day, you've got the Indians and you've got the Twins. You've got Rich Hill pitching for the Twins, and you've got Shane Bieber pitching for the Indians, the best pitcher in baseball so far this year. As someone who's watched him pitch so much, what has jumped out to you this year in terms of how he's improved?
I mean, it's crazy how quickly this has all happened and how he's gone from a pitch to contact guy to the most lethal strikeout guy in the game. It's been unbelievable to watch this rise. The biggest thing is that his curveball has just improved dramatically. It's like the best curveball in baseball. Sarah Lang and I recently did a deep dive into all of his numbers and everything that Stack has to say, and the curveball's just improved so much that it's really, really upped his game. And then the addition of the cutter, I think, has been flying a little bit under the radar. The way that has developed and gotten guys a little bit more off his fastball, but then also causing that separation between his breaking pitches. I think that has also just taken his game to the next level. And between those two pitches, I mean, everything's working. Every time you talk to any guy in the Indians, any one of his catchers that's catching him that night, they say every pitch is working. He can throw any pitch in any count, and it's just unbelievable. And that's been true. The numbers back it up. And it just seems like he's just on a roll that I don't think anyone really expected to happen.
I agree with you. I think the cutter, you know, his cutter is one that takes your breath away. We had a Sunday night game a couple weeks ago, Indians and White Sox, and watching the physical reaction of the hitters to that cutter, I mean, it kind of took me back to the days when I covered Mariano Rivera and he was throwing a cutter where it's almost like the hitters, you know, have it in their brain. Okay, this is where the ball is going to be, and it's like a foot and a half away from that spot. Like, they're falling backwards. They're missing the ball by so much. I wish there was an analytical way to determine exactly how much hitters are missing his cutter by. I mean, he's absolutely dominating hitters with that pitch this year.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't agree anymore. It's been unbelievable to hear the other opposing team's reactions to this pitch. I mean, we have these types of quotes coming in every night, and they say, man, that cutter's really throwing us off. And it's been also interesting to hear people respond to the curveball, too, because there's been a few players who said, yeah, I think he added the curveball this year. And it's like, no, he's had it the last few years. And it just shows how much better it's gotten if it's starting to get more opponents' attention. So it seems like each year all of his pitches just keep taking huge leaps and strides, and man, he's becoming just untouchable right now.
Yeah, and as Jeff pointed out, I do think he's got a chance to win the American League MVP award if he keeps this up through this shortened season. All right, Bandy, thanks for doing this. Always great to talk with you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. Another good batch here. First up, we've got Brenton Gibbs at Brenton Gibbs. Writes in, hi, Buster. What's your reaction to date overall to the National League DH rule? Hasn't been a lot of discussion about it so far, so I assume it's been well received. Is it only a matter of time before full inception?
Yeah, I think we're never going back to a time when the National League has pitchers bad. They haven't agreed to anything for 2021, but it may only make sense. Front office is absolutely fully in support of it. I think the union's fully in support of it. It's been interesting, though, that it really hasn't helped the offense this year. National League DH, as Hembo sent me this note, are slashing 229 batting average, 309 on base percentage, 409 slugging percentage. And according to Hembo, as of now, per game league-wide scoring is down.
Wow.
Year over year from last year. So far, the universal DH, not goosing the offense like we might have anticipated.
Maybe they'll have to figure that out in the offseason. A little bit different roster construction. They had it a, you know, it's an odd year. Regina Wilson wants to piggyback on that question at Margarita Noir. She writes in, "Hey Buster, how many National League pitchers are actually missing batting this year? Have you heard anything on that?"
Just not having the opportunity to, you know, to talk to players on a daily basis. I haven't posed that question to players, but I guarantee you Adam Wainwright's missing it. I guarantee you there's a part of Clayton Kershaw absolutely would love to do that. Max Scherzer absolutely would love to do that. I think most pitchers, though, were kind of like, eh, A, they weren't very good at it. And I think they looked at it as just something that, you know, it was a minor part of their daily preparation. You know, the rounds of batting practice for starting pitchers, very occasionally for the relief pitchers. I don't think that many guys are missing it.
Next up, Corey Rukert at Corey R underscore 12 writes in, "Joey Votto was once a great hitter, but he is done. Is he done after what appears to be three straight years of decline?"
I'm not ready to say that, Corey, because he historically has been a slow starter. If you look at, and I didn't double check this morning with his numbers, but generally speaking in his career, I think he's been better in the second half. But he's older. He's now on the, you know, the backside of his 30s. And it's interesting. He actually is closing in on so many milestones. He's 117 hits from 2000. He needs 13 homers to get to 300. He needs 48 RBI to get to 1,000. And he turns 37 next month.
Last one for today, Keith Kirchhoff at Keith Kirchhoff writes in, "Tampa is leading the pack in the East. Their offense seems to have put it together. Are you regretting changing your preseason pick to the Yankees, or do you think the Bronx Bombers reclaim the lead once they resume play?"
Yeah, I think they're going to reclaim the lead. I have so much respect for Tampa Bay, but their pitching is decimated. And you wonder how that's going to manifest at some point. You know, the Yankees, I think, especially as they start to get some of these guys back in the next couple weeks, you know, we're going to have Aaron Judge back, it looks like. And then at some point relatively soon, DJ LeMahieu comes back. And I do think that there'll be a team that'll add pitching. If they get a Clevinger, then yeah, I think that they'll be doing something. By the way, I am hearing that the Rays are being very, very aggressive in trade conversations. They're looking to augment before the deadline.
Nice little nugget for everyone who stuck around all the way through the podcast. If you did, thank you very much. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Thanks for writing in, everyone.
That's it for today. My thanks to David, to Mandy, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we must fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.